Welcome to this week's episode of Roman Murder, Old Tea, Not Cold Tea, But They're Guilty. I'm your host, Stephanie Powers Bailey.
Co-hosting Brenda Corker,
Margaret Kennedy,
and Geneva Jones Salter. For those of you listening right now and are not aware of the term tea, we have a few definitions for you. Anybody want to throw one out?
The scuttlebug. You got that hot goss?
Oh, yeah. The 411.
Mm-hmm. I have nothing on the top of my head right now.
Anyway, that's what we are referring to.
Special
if we say
Roman vocabulary.
Tea. Yes, put it on the vocab list.
T.
So we have two ancient sources on the death of Cleopatra, one by Plutarch and one by Cassius Dio. Both agree that she was in her mausoleum upon her death, but there are some different theories between the two. And unfortunately, both were written long after her death anyway in our secondhand accounts, so it's unclear how true they actually are. So Plutarch says, Cleopatra sent to Caesar a letter which she had written and sealed, and putting everybody out of the monument but her two women, she shut the doors. Caesar, opening her letter and finding pathetic prayers and entreaties, that she might be buried in the same tomb with Anthony, soon guessed what was doing. At first, he was going himself in all haste, but changing his mind, sent others to see. The thing had been quickly done. The messengers came at full speed and found the guards apprehensive of nothing, but on opening the doors, they saw her stone dead, lying upon a bed of gold, set out in all her royal ornaments. Iras, one of her women, lay dying at her feet, and Charmignon, anyway, just ready to fall, scarce able to hold up her head, was adjusting her mistress's diadem. And when one that came in angrily, was this well done of your lady Charmignon? Extremely well, she answered, and became the descendant of so many kings. And as she said this, she fell down dead by the bedside.
Whew.
Yeah, it's a
that was like Cleopatra or her servant.
That so in Plutarch's excerpt, he says that Cleopatra wrote a suicide letter and sent it to Caesar, and then he sends his men out to go check on her. And as soon as they enter the mausoleum, Cleopatra is dead and her two women have died right next to her.
Right. Talking about dedication.
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
She would have pulled me aside. I would be like, I think I need to go to the back room.
Let me ask my mom.
Yeah. The first ever Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Yes. So the thing is about this one is that Cleopatra sends out her suicide note, and then as soon as Octavian's men get there, she and both of her ladies are supposed to be dead. But scientifically, that's probably not how a snake bite would work, and I'll explain that more later. But Cassius Dio has a different idea of what might have happened, and he writes, no one knows clearly in what way she perished, for the only marks on her body were slight pricks on the arm. Some say she applied to herself an asp which had been brought to her in a jar, in a water jar, or perhaps hidden in some flowers. Others declare that she had had smeared a pin with which she was wont to fasten her hair, and some poison possessed of such a property that in ordinary circumstances, it would not injure the body at all, but if it came in contact with even a drop of blood, would destroy the body very quietly and painlessly. And that previous to this time, she had worn it in her hair as usual, but now had made a slight scratch in her arm and had dipped the pin in the blood. In this or in some very similar way, she perished and her two handmaidens with her. So instead of just a snake coming in a jar of figs or something, Castillo says that she kept a small amount of poison in her hairpin. But again, same thing with Plutarch, is that the science doesn't really hold up in how they describe Cleopatra's death. So either way, the venom that would have killed Cleopatra would probably be from an Egyptian cobra. And yeah, that death sounds pretty horrific. Cassius Dio describes it as very quietly and painlessly. But this is what dying of cobra venom is actually like. So the venom is made of neurotoxins and anticoagulant, which means that it'll paralyze you and then liquefy your insides. So the venom causes swelling and it results in something called compartment syndrome, which means that the tissue, like imagine your arm, the tissue literally swells so much that there's no room to expand. And the tightness feels like your arm has been dipped into an acid fire.
Oh my God.
Is how some people describe it. And the only way that you could save a limb that's been exposed to this is by cutting it open and allowing the flesh to spill out like an overcooked sausage.
I know you all can't see my face right now, but my mouth is wide open.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Doesn't sound great. So then the neurotoxins kick in and the victim is confused and paralyzed. And then the anticoagulant kicks in and the blood clotting stops and the victim hemorrhages internally. So basically your insides turn to soup. And
like a great time to me.
Oh, absolutely. No. It just as they describe it, quietly and painlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. A very dignified way mm-hmm. to go.
Dipping your arms and limbs and acid sounds mm-hmm. painless to me.
Sounds like she's about to explode.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for real.
So, the worst way to go. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So both sources also say that she and her handmaids died pretty quickly after she sent her suicide note to Caesar. But really, if you were bitten by a cobra, it would take about 4 to 6 hours of horrible pain to die. So it's just sort of unrealistic that the story happens the way they describe. And so a ancient historian, Pat Brown, she sort of made it her mission to figure out what happened to Cleopatra. And she says that she doesn't believe that Cleopatra would have the motivation for suicide, because why would she want to die? But honestly, you can't take modern psychology and put it into an ancient thought about death, because in ancient Rome, the way you died was so much more important than the way you lived. So I would like to respectfully disagree with Pat Brown and say that Cleopatra had every reason to want to kill herself, because she had no desire to be paraded in the streets by Octavian and shown off as this prize. And so why not leave her life at the top of her game?
Mm-hmm. Leave something to be remembered by.
Exactly. But you can't deny that the venom story seems pretty unrealistic. So personally, my theory is that Octavian was threatened by Cleopatra living at all, because she had her son who could have been the heir to both Egypt and Rome, and he saw that as a threat to his own power. So I believe that he had one of his men go into the mausoleum and kill her himself. So then there was no problem to worry about. But then he maybe spread these rumors about her death, maybe attempting to make her look weak or something, but joke's on him, because she's got the greater legacy. She has the more glorious death.
Man.
Absolutely. I mean, people are still debating what happened to her to this day, and no one really, even unless you take a Roman history class, you don't know who Octavian is.
Yeah.
Everyone knows who she is.
Mm-hmm. So the next Roman murder we'll be talking about is Julius Caesar. And I could talk about how, like, everyone in the Senate hated him because he was, like, becoming he was a dictator, but they were thinking he was going to take it back to, like, the days of kings. So, but I'd rather focus on, like, the more interesting part, which is a bunch of people believe that Brutus is actually Caesar's son, which is T, and I really would love to believe that. So I have a source from Plutarch, and he wrote this concerning Brutus and Caesar and Brutus's mom. So, he is believed to have done out of a tenderness to Servilia, the mother of Brutus, for Caesar had, it seems, in his youth, been very intimate with her, and she passionately in love with him. And considering that Brutus was born about that time in which their loves were at the highest, Caesar had a belief that he was his own child. The story is told that when the great question of the conspiracy of Catiline, which had like to have been the destruction of the Commonwealth, was debated in the Senate, Cato and Caesar were both standing up, contending together on the decision to become two, at which time a little note was delivered to Caesar from without. Like, I guess that means from outside. He phrased that weird. Which he took and read silently to himself. Upon this, Cato cried out loud and accused Caesar of holding correspondence with and receiving letters from the enemies of the Commonwealth. And when many other senators exclaimed against it, Caesar delivered the note as he had received it to Cato, who, reading it, found it to be a love letter from his own sister, and threw it back again to Caesar with the words, "Keep it, you drunkard," and returned and returned to the subject of the debate. So, that's...
Sounds like me with my ex.
Yeah, Cato kind of got his own right there. He had to read a love letter from his sister in front of the whole Senate, but...
Gross.
Oh. You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would make sense if Brutus was Caesar's son because, I mean, a lot of people, their argument is that Caesar would be 14 or 15 at the time of... Brutus's birth, but like that was kind of standard back then, I think. And like,
yeah, if you get married at 12, like, what do you expect?
Yeah. Also, I mean, there are people now getting pregnant at like 14, 15, 16, so it's really not far fetched. And
I'd love to believe it.
I know. Also, just the mercy that Caesar would show Brutus when he was like supposedly involved in a conspiracy against one of like Caesar's friends. He just said, when you arrest him, like, don't be violent with him and like just put him by himself and don't let him do violence to himself or others. And that would kind of make sense if like he was his son, or like even if he's not, just because he's like a really close friend's son.
Kind of like a familial love.
Yeah, absolutely. And Plutarch could be wrong. I mean, he wrote this 100 years after this whole thing went down. But when he says, "Et tu, Brute," you know, that famous, very famous line that he actually said in Greek, but I don't know how to speak Greek, so I'm just going to leave it in Latin, "Et tu, Brute." It could be like, even like my own son is trying to kill me, I guess I won't fight this.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that would be very exciting.
I think that would definitely be the moment a parent would give up.
Yeah. Absolutely. Also, I mean, if I were Brutus and like I couldn't tell anybody that Caesar was my dad, I think over time that would kind of get to me and I might want to turn against him. Even though he treated my mother well, you know, you can't really have a family.
With lies.
Yeah.
But then again, like, wouldn't you think that if they found out he was Caesar's son, that they would try to kill him too? Because, you know, like, father, like, son.
Yeah.
True.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't want to, the whole thing is they didn't want, like, a dictatorship anyway.
Yeah, self-preservation for sure.
Or he could come back and be like, I'm going to just punish the whole entire empire because you killed my dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, also, if they knew he had a son, they would think it was going to go back to, like, the Seven Kings of Rome. Even though I'm not sure if they were, like, the monarchies in later Europe, if they were, I can't really remember if they were familial, but that could give bad vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we are going to talk about everybody's favorite emperor in the Roman Empire, Nero.
Woo!
So everybody knows that his real father's name was Gnaeus, and his real name was Lucius Domitius something. His last name's really long. I really can't pronounce it. And his mom is Agrippina the Younger. After her first marriage of... when the husband died, she married her uncle Claudius, which was the emperor before Nero. And once he was assassinated, or quote-unquote poisoned by his wife, she made Nero the next emperor. So everybody knows, like, when he got into power, he was 17 years old, and he just went crazy after his mom did not approve of his potential wife, even though he was already married to Octavia. But
it's all those hormones.
Because, you know, every mother approves of her 17-year-old emperor's girlfriend.
Oh my gosh, that would be like a high school sweetheart. I'm going to marry them, Mom.
Roman High School Musical.
It's kind of
Nero
sad.
Edition.
It's kind of sad because it didn't last that long. But originally he was married to Octavia, right? But he didn't want her. He was trying to go for this freed woman whose name is Poppaea, and, well, you know, he executed his first wife, and then he murdered his mom so he could be with her. So there's a big old happy little ever after. Until, I don't know what got him upset or mad. It could be because of her first pregnancy when the baby didn't make it. So when she was pregnant the second time around, he just got, I don't know, furious. I guess he was tired of waiting. I don't know. And he just beat her to death. Like, he was stomping on her, killing her and the baby. So after she died, like, I don't know what was happening. He just went ballistic.
Misogyny took over, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So after that, he married Statilia Melissania, forcing her husband to commit suicide so he could be with her. Gotta love him already.
Make up your mind.
I don't know about you guys, but if I heard that story, I would have been scared. Like, I would not want him to be my ruler.
Or husband.
Yeah,
right?
Can I be his third wife, please? No.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that marriage didn't last long either. So he went on into marrying a sex-slaved boy named Sporus, right?
Crazy.
Yep. This is the biggest tea of them all. He married him because it reminded him of his second wife.
No.
Yes. Oh. Just because he looked just like her. Rumor had it.
What
that,
a compliment to her.
Rumor had it that Poppaea, his second wife's father, had an affair with Sporus' mom. So that's why they kind of look alike. So they could have been brothers and sisters. That's the rumor. That's the little tea right there. But we really don't know. And poor little Sporus, he had a hard life. It was just so rough. Like, after Nero died, like, the next person who tried to get a little taste of what the king was like, lie to you not, was Nymphidis Sapina, who wanted to, like, take him as his wife. Because, I mean, like, Nero had everything. You know, he had the Dormus Aurea, where, you know, the Golden Palace and everything. And it was quoted from Tactius, a former sex slave herself. She said that Nero had a whole bunch of orgies and, like, sex parties and a whole bunch of feasts and festivals in this area. And they said, like, the tall statue of himself, like, flower petals would rain down on them and, like, perfume. So it's just like a whole music video or something's happening. I don't know.
Yeah, music video.
If you don't think that's crazy enough, a little bit more tea for you. Oh, it was second cup. It was said that he would dress like up as an animal and have the sex slave naked boys and girls like on the cross, on a crucifix, tied up, and he would pretend to eat them. Like they were in the arena. I know it's crazy.
Oh my god.
Yummy.
Cannibalism. Good. New topic. Cannibalism next week.
On to the real crazy stuff. Everybody knows him for like the Great Fire. Everybody blamed him for it. But he switched it real quick and blamed it on the Christians. Ooh. And started the whole persecution of them. He would even, like, when he would have his little dinner parties, he would have the Christians, like, on the cross, tied up, in, like, animal fur. I don't know what's...
He didn't pretend to eat them, right?
No. He lit them. He dipped them in oil and lit them on fire. And it was said, like, just to light up the garden or the little area they were eating in. Or he would run around his little chariot while they would burn. So
sounds very quaint.
I thought it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm, lovely. I don't know how to key it around the smell, but yeah, that's not my taste.
Beautiful aroma, some audio, burning flesh. Yeah. With your, what would they serve back then? Bread.
And bread and
bread.
I don't know.
Bread and flesh.
There weren't potatoes in Rome. I learned that a few years ago.
Interesting.
Side topic. Yeah, no potatoes.
People actually thought that he was the Antichrist.
Oh.
Really? Because that's what the Christians thought, because it relates to the Bible. Well. And how, like, 666, mm-hmm. And it was like, if you, like, put that, like, added up with Nero, Claudius, Caesar.
Oh, yeah.
It would just be like, boom, boom, boom. So it was like, oh, he's the Antichrist.
Oh.
I know, it was crazy. But the reason for his... suicide was because of the downfall of the Roman economy, because of the Roman reconstruction after the Great Fire, and he spent all the money trying to build his new palace for his little orgies and stuff, and the revolts that were happening in Britain and Judea and conflicts with Parthia and everything like that. And because he had spent like all this money to like help fix these issues, it brought down the value of currency. So it was just a big chaos. So at the end, like the Senate originally planned to beat him to death, but he found out and he killed the person who was gonna hit him first. So he was like, gotcha. So he decided to kill himself first, but halfway through it, he couldn't finish the job. So he bullied his private secretary, Epaphroditus, whatever, however you say his name, to finish the job. If I was his private secretary, I would not do it. I'm sorry. I just can't imagine killing somebody.
How did he do it?
Like, he originally stabbed himself, but he couldn't. It was just so much pain, you know? So, like, how can you finish that? How can you let your body just hurt yourself on purpose?
You're just like, ow. Go the rest of the way. Oh, man. I don't know if I can finish the job. I mean, I bent my nail back accidentally today, and I almost cried. I don't think I could do that.
And he did it just in time before the Senate came to finish off the job. But when they saw his body on the floor, they just carried him away.
Wow.
Take out the trash.
So respectfully, I'm sure.
Yeah. Anything else? That's good.
So the final murder or death in Rome that we will be talking about is Lucius Annaeus Seneca. He was a Roman philosopher, and he wrote about all these tragedies and just sad things. He practiced Stoicism, which was an ancient Greek school of philosophy, and it was just like based on knowledge and like good virtue and the highest good. It was said that the wise live in harmony with the divine reason. And they were indifferent to like fortune and pleasure and pain. But the most important thing that I wanted to talk about is, so Seneca like killed himself, but it was an enforced suicide. In 65 AD. And what happened was Nero like ordered him to kill himself after the Pisonian conspiracy. And Seneca was accused of conspiring against Nero. And so Nero and his wife were like, all right, cool. Nero ordered Seneca to kill himself. His wife was like, yeah, I mean, I'll do this with you. Like what? So they like slit their wrists, and one source says that Seneca like slit his own ankles too. But then another one says that military or like whatever authorities were there, like cut his ankles for him to like speed up his death. But Nero like spared his wife. So she ended up living. And she like died a few years later. I'm so interested in this whole like enforced suicide thing, because it's like, apparently it's this big like forensic phenomenon, like suicide by cop. Like if you,
today.
Yeah, in like modern times, like if you just don't have, I guess, the guts or means, you can get, it's like called suicide by cop, and you can just end it all like without having to do it yourself, which I think is kind of like, I don't know.
Kind of wrong.
That you can like go through with it, like what do you really want to, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and then you're going to put that on another person.
Yeah. If you don't want to like do that yourself, which, I mean, I don't want anyone to want to do
solution.
That themselves.
Let's all go to therapy.
Yeah.
But
you're going to put it on someone else like that. And
the whole thing is like, he like practices stoicism. And so like, they don't like fear death or anything. So I would think that you would be able to just do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. It sort of reminds me of Nero's death.
Mm-hmm. A little callback moment.
He couldn't handle the pain.
Yeah. I mean, well, Nero was the behind Seneca's death. So, I mean, I don't know. It's very interesting to me.
That the same phenomena is happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you said Nero's mom is who?
Agrippina the Younger.
Yeah. So she hired Locusta. I like found this. Yeah. She hired Locusta to like murder and like poison a bunch of people in like the imperial like family.
Like Claudius and Brutanius.
Uh-huh.
Hired her, and then later on Nero killed her. So her mom won't be like, I mean, his mom won't be like, hey, I'm gonna need you to like kill my son. He's getting out of here.
Yeah, I feel like this is just a trend for Nero, like all of like Nero's lineage. Like maybe they're just
killers?
Yeah. Maybe they're murderers, all of them.
Nero was like, you are not about to expose me. I'm in deep enough trouble.
You are not about to spill the tea, sis.
This whole enforced suicide thing, I don't know how I feel about it. And I feel like it happened so much more like in the Roman times too. Like people were just like, yo, you gotta kill yourself or like there is no war.
I'm like, I'm gonna die either way.
And they're gonna call it suicide even if.
Because I think somehow suicide was still more honorable than murder. Because murder sort of implies there's a punishment, and suicide implies that there's a decision.
Yeah, like you chose.
And I feel like maybe this is just the perception, but I feel like suicide back then was a lot. It wasn't really you wanting to escape, it was you having to for your reputation. It wasn't really like, it wasn't as much as a mental health thing. It was an honor, reputation, status thing.
It goes back to what I said about Pat Brown and how I just don't think you can take modern psychology and put it into an ancient context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think it's like also too, because Seneca wrote so much about death and like dying and how to live like with the death around you and like how to,
he probably thought about his death a lot.
Oh yeah. And like how to actually think about death and like not be like afraid or whatever. I don't know. Maybe we should all become stoics.
Maybe.
Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see.
how a Roman died was incredibly important. It was their final chance to leave a legacy and to influence posterity. And I think we get a lot of that today.
Yeah, I think that especially if you like try to parallel it with like serial killers today, I definitely think there's some sort of idea of like leaving a legacy, like most serial killers are like, I want everyone to know that I did this. Like, I want to take all of the credit. This was me. I want to leave something like behind. And I think that there was a lot of that in Roman death, Roman murder.
The difference I'd say is that the murders aren't occurring for the sake of violence, but rather for some sort of like what they saw as like a higher ideological reason or something.
I found it interesting about how they forced suicide to like hold their reputation and to leave a legacy, as you guys just said. But the way we view it is like a mental health crisis. Like, there's no other way for people to escape the problems that they're facing because they don't feel as if they have a legacy to live or a reason to live.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people like Caesar and, well, Caesar wasn't a victim of suicide, but these big government officials who killed themselves, it kind of glorified them in a sense where it made them almost untouchable. It really like solidified their legacy. Whereas today, if like someone to like at that level of fame did it, it would kind of bring them down and like humanize them. Mm-hmm. Be like, instead of, wow, I can't believe they like went out in the prime of their life and, you know, chose to secure themselves like that. It's like, oh, wow, I can't believe that was going on with them. That's like heartbreaking, and like it seemed like they had everything, you
and
know?
Like selfish. Like with yeah. the, nowadays, we're like, that's so selfish. Like, how could yeah. they do that to like me? You know?
Yeah.
But like back in like the Roman times, people were like, "Wow, that's amazing that this person decided that they were just going to keep their image the way it is."
Mm-hmm. So I think all of us through our research in this project have sort of seen how our society sees death and how Rome sees death. And I think you can tell a lot about the parallels and the differences there.
But thank you for listening to our murder podcast.
Thanks for joining in on the tea and let 'em fuck it.